I will call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we will start because we do have a full agenda. And I see the commissioner's yawning, but we need to wake her up and call her up here. I know exactly how you feel. I feel that way today myself. Welcome, and we saw you this morning with Secretary Spellings from Washington, and we had that news. But actually, for right now, we are just trying to get a handle on the governor's recommendations that the department be cut by 4%. And I know you have talked about that in general at the last presentation, and also even just yesterday at the at Representative Murphy's committee. But since these are a lot of different members, we wanted to just hear again from you. How would you implement the 4% cut, and what would that exactly mean?
Madam Chair and members, as Representative Growling said, we presented this information to Representative Murphy's committee yesterday. The 4% reduction for our agency would represent $892,000 each year ongoing. Also, the governor requested the Board of Teaching have a reduction of 4%, and that would be the equivalent of $25,000. And then for the Board of School Administrators, that would be a $7,000 reduction to their budget. The amount of money, the $892,000, would represent the equivalent of about 10 to 12 FTE. It would just depend on where those reductions would fall and to whom as we look at our budget. We have not identified any specific areas at this time, divisions or areas, because we also will be anticipating what happens at the legislature if there are directions to us that we have to focus on certain areas for school improvement, let's say. Then we might have to redirect or look at other areas to reduce instead of an area maybe that you're charging us to do some additional work in. So we won't be making those decisions until after the legislature completes its work and we understand if we receive any mandates of creating task forces or have to staff any additional kinds of services from your direction, then that will help us with that. We do anticipate that if we have any attrition due to retirements, that would help potentially with our staffing situation. We also will be looking at other kind of administrative reductions or travel reductions. We're trying to, look at every area where we could possibly reduce and not affect staff if possible. We do know that these reductions will affect the kind of services we can provide. Response time might be a little bit longer for any requests, but we will make every attempt to continue providing the services that we can to the school district.
All right. If you made a 4% cut and you cut that amount out of the budget, would that impact any matching money, either private or federal?
Madam Chair, we would certainly try to keep any kind of reductions away from that. If we had some commitment for a match of our in-kind, we would certainly have to, and that's why we're saying, too, that as we're looking at everything, we need to take into account those kinds of potential issues, too. But we would certainly not want to affect any kind of grant or match that potentially would have to be made.
Any questions from members? That's pretty short. All right. I'm glad we didn't make you wait any longer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do we have a question?
Yeah.
All right. We do have a quorum. So, Representative Marquardt, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, so move the minutes.
Representative Marquardt moves the minutes of March 14th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. now that we have a critical mass, before we go to our first bill, I just want to let members know that it's our intention, if timelines keep on at the rate that they're supposed to and that we're trying for, we will have the House Education Finance Bill up in our committee to take a first look at tomorrow, and then we'll do the markup on Tuesday afternoon, which will be our final committee meeting. So members will have a good chance to look at it over the break, and hopefully we can run through it with the staff tomorrow in the committee, and then see what time, if we have time to hear from people on it. If things hit a snag, we will, you know, try very, very hard to not have that happen. But if it does, then we, our next plan would be to get it to everybody by 5 o'clock before members go home for the break. But it's our intention at this moment to have it up in this committee. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when would our amendments be due from the minority?
Representative Erickson, good question, because we are all coming back at noon on Tuesday, and it doesn't seem fair to have to have it in, have to have them in when nobody's actually working. So what do you think? That the deadline is no. You will be here on Monday? Okay. So you can actually work with the staff on Monday, I stand corrected. So you would be able to get them in then ahead of time. But, you know, we'll obviously, knowing that it is break, we'll try to make accommodations if people make every effort.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Representative Swales. And actually, Ms. Patrick has just told me Greg and Mr. Stroud and Mr. Crow will be here on Thursday as well. They don't get much of a break like we do. That's right. All right. Representative Swales, you are on the committee, so you can go ahead and move your own bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 3958.
Representative Swales moves House File 3958. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that establishes a teacher licensure via portfolio process. And I'm going to have Sharon Ballmer from the Board of Teaching briefly introduce what the bill will do.
Very good. Ms. Ballmer, please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Appreciate the opportunity very much to bring this before you for your consideration today. As Representative Swales said, we currently have a licensure via portfolio option for individuals, and the bill that you have before you would establish a fee structure around that licensure via portfolio option. This is an option that that allows an individual to become licensed in a non-traditional manner. The individual can use coursework, prior professional experience, professional development, or other experiences to demonstrate that they have met the same standards that they would meet if they were enrolled in a traditional teacher preparation program. For example, an individual who seeks to be a high school Spanish teacher, who may have served in the Peace Corps or in a South American country, would, in the portfolio option, be able to use their experiences while in the Peace Corps to demonstrate a number of the standards without having to take coursework to do so. As you may imagine, licensure via portfolio has become a very valuable and increasingly popular option for a select group of people. This option is not for everyone. But approximately 200 licenses have been issued this way since we launched this option in 2004. The number this morning was 196. The portfolio option continues to gain in popularity, and our cost projections show that it's simply not sustainable at its current rate of growth. And a fee would allow the Board of Teaching to maintain this as an important alternative. This bill that you have before you is supported by a number of really important stakeholders. Of course, the Board of Teaching, Minnesota Department of Education, Education Minnesota, and MACSE, our colleagues in higher education. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. We do have, I brought along a number of portfolios so that you might be able to see what a portfolio looks like. And while I do that, perhaps I could invite our testifier, Laura Messler, who has actually gone through the portfolio process to earn a license, share her experience with you.
Thank you, Ms. Baumer. Representative Morgan, is your question for Ms. Baumer, or do you want to...
You do.
Okay, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Baumer, you said 196 applicants have received licensure via portfolio since 2004?
Ms. Baumer. Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, that's correct. That was the count just today.
Madam Chair, Ms. Baumer, do we have any data yet about retention of those people who have pursued licensure by portfolio there? We know one of the problems the districts have not only with attracting new teachers is retaining them beyond 3 to 5 years. I know that puts us at not quite 4 years, 3 or 4 years, but do we have any data on retention for those types of applicants yet?
Ms. Baumer.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, a fabulous question. We have not gathered that. The data, though, that we do have would allow us to begin testing those people. The data that we have is broken down in a number of ways. We have it by licensure field, how many people are pursuing this as their initial licensure. That is, we know it's about 20% of people using portfolio are getting their initial licenses, and the rest are earning additional licenses to an existing license. We have that. We also have the breakdown by region in the state. Every region in the state is reflected in our numbers, and it's nearly, we've got about half in the metro, 105, and then the rest are spread throughout the state. So we believe this is a real statewide option that is being accessed, but I don't have, so that, those data, those, the pieces of data that we have, I think would lend themselves to being able to track the kind of information that you'd like.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Baumer, I would strongly encourage you to do that. I think that would be a very valuable tool in assessing the true long-term effectiveness of this program. Thank you.
We have two other legislators on the list that I'm going to take, and then even if we get some more, we'll go to Ms. Messler next, and then we have other legislators. But first we have Representative Dominguez, and then Representative Campbell. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question is, can he use his license portfolio in any capacity of teaching?
Ms. Baumer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dominguez, yes, we, for any area that we offer licensure for teachers, this can be used for, this can be accessed. So from math teachers to elementary teachers to physical education, science, and the list goes on, and I do have information today about all the different licensure areas that have been accessed. And it includes all those I've mentioned and many more.
Okay.
Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Baumer. I must apologize because my original license was by the pen and quill method. tell me about fees. Tell me about, is the $75 for a portfolio fee above another base fee, or does it replace a fee, or, and what do the fees generate on an annual basis?
Ms. Palmer.
Ms.
Palmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Ansel. Another great question. The fees right now, there are four that you see in the bill. The first one is the $57 application fee. That is uniform to anyone who's applying for a license. They've either gone, they have had an approved portfolio, or they've been enrolled and completed a traditional teacher preparation course. That is already being applied to the licensure via portfolio folks. So that's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. The next ones that you see beginning in Section B, the first one is a $75 eligibility fee, as we call it. To be very frank with you, the intent of this fee is to serve as sort of a screening aid for us. It, as I mentioned, this option is not for everyone. It is for a unique group of people that have life experience, professional experience, and coursework to demonstrate the same standards that they would have to meet in a preparation program in another setting. So we believe that this may help to screen out and identify the right folks. We do a transcript review at the beginning of the process regardless. This would be a fee for the candidate to help them really discern whether this is an appropriate process for them. We did talk in the Senate about possibly absorbing that into the other fees that I'll talk about in a moment, and perhaps the establishment of a fee in general would serve the same purpose. So we're very much open to discussion about that eligibility fee. Then the fees that you see on page 2 of the bill, there are two. One is a $500 fee for one portfolio and $250 for any subsequent portfolio. It's important to describe accurately what's expected. If a person has already a teaching license, they already are a licensed teacher and they are seeking to add a field of licensure, they would put together one portfolio in that extra content area. If there's someone completely new to the field, they would actually need to complete two portfolios. One is, of course, in the content area, mathematics or special education or whatever, and the other is in pedagogy, that they've demonstrated all the what we call our standards of effective practice. We didn't feel that it was right to have that same fee for the people in coming into the field to be hit twice by a $500 fee. That was, but again, and we sort of benchmarked these fees against some other data that we have. For example, the University of Minnesota has an administrator portfolio option. We came in slightly under what they have. We looked at a couple other states, but we are open to discussing the fees and if we set them at the right place.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Why don't we go to the next testifier, Ms. Mesler, if you could identify yourself for the tape and tell us about how what you went through to get one of these portfolios.
Okay, well, good afternoon and thank you. I'm Laura Messler and I'm here from Edina Public Schools. I moved to Minnesota in 2004 with 13 years of teaching experience. 10 of those were middle and high school language arts and then 3 in the media center. I had excellent references and reviews and a current licensure in both Texas and Georgia for language arts and then also media. I was told I would need a number of classes to acquire a Minnesota license in communication arts. Named Language Arts in Texas and Georgia. In Minnesota, the licensure is for grades 5 through 12. My licensure was for grades 6 through 12, so fifth grade is what gave me the problem. The portfolio option, okay, it allowed me to get licensed in Minnesota, and it was a great option for me because to take those classes, they were very expensive, obviously time-consuming, and additionally, they would not meet requirements for a lane change in the salary schedule because they were undergraduate classes and I did have a master's degree. So the classes that they were suggesting were basically beginner teaching classes. So for me, the portfolio option was just awesome. It was a way for me to get back into communication arts in this state.
Thank you, Ms. Messler. Any questions? Any testimony from the audience on this bill? Okay, hearing none, we'll lay over House File 395. Oh, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want Ms. Bomer to describe what she just put up on the desktop.
Thank you, Ms. Bomer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. This is one example, and this is very standard. I've got a box full. Well, we can only fit 4 of these portfolios. I wanted you to see visually what a portfolio looks like. This is a mathematics portfolio. Someone who's adding to a teacher who already was licensed, adding that area of math, and it, as you can see, is voluminous. And it is not. We don't believe that it is a diminishing of the standards. It is, in fact, a very rigorous exercise for the folks that do choose to go through it. And so I have some other examples if you'd like to see those.
Representative Erickson, do you want to see any more examples? Okay, one is enough. And I have seen the on past the section of the department where these are stored, and there are some bigger ones than that. Thank you very, very much. Representative Swales, any closing comments?
I appreciate the opportunity for us to present this bill and look forward to us having this option in the state.
Thank you very much, and we'll lay over House File 3958 for possible inclusion. Members, the next one is a short little bill that I will move for myself, House File 4018. And this is a bill that is came from the department policy bill, and it just changes some school district budget and levy timelines and removes some obsolete references. And this motion is to have House File 4018 be recommended to pass and returned to the Education Finance Division. So with that, is there any questions or discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll renew my motion to have House File 4018 be recommended to pass and returned to the House Education Finance Division. Representative Tilbury. Oh, I have to vote. Whoops. Never mind. You can come up, but I just have to remember we need to vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails, and the motion bill is passed. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's see who your authors are. I'll move House File 4071 for possible inclusion. Representative Tilbury, what have you got here?
Well, I have something here that we had passed before, but I just wanted some small word changes that would happen in the second page of it, line 11, right where the paragraph C begins. What that allows us to do is really put the $3 additional fee that we're allowing for the Safe School levy for the purposes of putting into student support services. What we have found out this year is schools may have invested some money in cameras or metal detectors and things of that nature, and we felt that the legislation that we had passed earlier did recognize the school support team that is necessary and built relationships. And I think relationships is very important with school kids. I don't think metal detectors and cameras are providing that relationship piece. And with that, I wanted to just make that clarifying language.
So the crux of the bill is there on the second page. Are there any questions for Representative Tilbury? Anybody wishing to testify on this, Ms. Schwab, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And this language is very familiar. This $3 you actually gave us last year, which districts are already spending on the assorted programs. If you look starting on page 1, 2, 3, peace officers in the schools, sheriff's liaison, drug abuse prevention programs, gang resistance, all those down. And the real concern about Representative Tilbury's changes on page 2 really isn't the new language, but the language on 2.14 that says not less than the sum its expenditures for these purposes. It's sort of like a protected, or maintenance of effort, I think, is maybe the best way to think about it. It's sort of like our special ed maintenance of effort, where that would always have to be met and exceeded, even if, in fact, there was no new dollars coming and cuts had to be looked at. And in these hard times, members, we would like to maintain as much flexibility as possible. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dolson, did you want to testify? Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dolson, and I represent the Intermediate School District. Just to refresh your memory, there are 3 intermediate school districts in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, metropolitan area, and they provide very specialized services in the areas of special ed, career and technical education, and other programming. And first of all, I would like to thank the legislature. Last year, the intermediates requested a $10 $10 amount levied to their member school districts for safe school purposes, and I would just like to thank the legislature that did pass. So thank you very much. I just wanted to, and I did not get a chance to talk to Representative Tilbury, and I apologize for that. I just wanted to clarify that I hope the intent is that this language is in regards to the $30 in safe schools levy that regular school districts receive, but not the additional $10 that intermediate school districts might receive.
Thank you, and we'll ask the staff to clarify the answer to your question, unless Representative Tilbury.
I look to the staff to help clarify.
We look to the staff quite a bit. Okay, which one?
Madam Chair and members, the $3 set aside sets aside
$3 per pupil for the school district that receives the $30, so it wouldn't apply in this case to the additional $10 that the intermediate district can get.
Right. Thank you. Anybody else from the audience? Any legislative questions? Hearing none, House File 4071 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your consideration.
Representative Moe. Welcome, Representative Moe. And is there anyone who wants to move Representative Moe's bill? Representative Heidgerken.
I love the bill.
Representative Heidgerken moves House File 3107 for possible inclusion. And he has an amendment. Okay. Representative Moe, do you want Representative Heidgerken to do your amendment first?
Please.
Representative Heidgerken.
I will move the amendment, I believe it is 3107. A1.
Representative Heidgerken moves the amendment H3107A1. Any discussion? Representative Garofalo.
I guess I haven't seen the amendment, so if the gentleman, if I've read the amendment, could you please describe it to us so we know what it is?
Representative Heidgerken.
I will defer to the author of the bill.
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you prefer that I explain the whole bill and then...
Nope, we're on the amendment.
Representative Garofalo, the amendment allows for, if a school cannot pass an operating levy referendum, the school board, after having a public meeting and voting as a board, can approve an operating levy up to the cap, the existing cap and statute.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I think Representative Moe is right that it's better to discuss the whole bill, and Representative Heidgerken is just getting it in the shape he wants, and I think it'll make more sense when we discuss the whole bill. Any other discussion? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Moe, you've got the bill the way you want it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, for taking the time to hear this very important bill. Members of the committee, as you all know better than I think, after having this discussion for years about education funding, fair funding statewide, you know that many of our referendums in Greater Minnesota and also here in the metro area, but a majority in the Greater Minnesota, do not pass. As school districts, we don't have access to that almost $1,500 per pupil. And in fact, many of our districts have a difficult time passing any levy, even the dollar. And while I understand we want local control, we want people to take ownership in their own districts, to have accountability to their own districts, the system that we have now is inherently flawed. It allows for inequities in our education funding system to exist, because we have districts like mine, the average income is $32,000 for a family of four. We were asking the average family to raise their own property taxes by $300 or $400. Now, if you ask a family that has that much money to raise their own property taxes, and this is for only a $500 levy, not $1,400, not $1,000, $500. You ask them to raise their own property taxes $200 or $300, $400, they cannot do it. They look at you and say, well, this is going to be clothes for my kids, this is going to be gas for my car to get to work. We're forcing them to make a false choice. And in so doing, we're setting up their school districts for failure, we're setting up their teachers and parents and school boards to be burned out trying to pass these referendums that are destined to fail. Members, this is one tool of a challenged education funding system, one tool that is the most glaring mistake and deficiency we have, and it's causing our schools in Greater Minnesota and some in the metro area to look at choices that are very horrible. Getting rid of all extracurriculars, closing schools. One of our districts was looking at dissolving the district last year before they finally passed a very small levy. So, members, I'd like to, Madam Chair, would you prefer I take questions now or introduce the test card?
Completely up to you.
Okay.
You do it either way.
Okay, well, I'd like to introduce Steve Dixon, for the financial officer from Brainerd School District, which has recently failed at their attempted levy, and you'd like to share that experience with us.
Thank you. Madam
Welcome,
Chair,
Mr. Dixon, if you could re-identify yourself for the chair.
Yes, Stephen Dickinson, business director from the Brainerd School District, School District 181. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, Brainerd has become the poster child down here as an excellent school district academically and financially that is soon to be very different. We have a small referendum in place right now, $199. We were seeking a fairly average referendum amount last November that failed overwhelmingly after a very good campaign that clearly the community did understand the message, and I believe our superintendent has probably been here and maybe spoken with you about that too. I'll try to stick to my field. I left you with a financial report here, extremely fine print, I apologize, but the point of it is there's two yellow lines. If you like dollars, you'll like the top yellow line. If you like percentages, you'll like the bottom yellow line. That's the unreserved fund balance. That's usually the measure that school districts are measure their financial health. And you'll see from several years ago where our school district was financially sound that in the box, the box column is the current fiscal year. We're ending with just about a zero fund balance this year, and we'll soon be going negative. Now, this is after, and you can see some of my notes down on the right-hand corner, after several years of a lot of cuts already. I'll put it in a nutshell. Several years ago, we had about 500 teachers and reasonable class sizes. Next year, we will have about 400 teachers, so down 20% in teaching staff. And I would sum it as we will have unreasonable class sizes next year. Financially, on the expenditure side, you can basically summarize school districts. The largest variable is class size. How many teachers can we afford to employ? And we will be doing dismally a disservice to our students beginning next year with class sizes in the high school of 45 and possibly above, at kindergarten nearly 30. You won't see good results out of the Brainerd School District within a number of years.
Thank you very much. That's very sobering news, and we know that your parents, I think, are coming. Is it next week?
Yes, April 1st.
Yeah. Well-timed day. Any questions or comments? Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is about the Brainerd School District. In 99, your total expenses were $46 million. In 07, they were $66 million. That's a $20 million increase in 8 years. What did the number of students do in that time span?
Mr. Dickinson.
Yes, thank you, committee. Our enrollment has been fairly flat. I think in 99, we probably would have had about 7,100 students. We have about 7,200 students now.
Thank you again. Can you give us an idea where the extra $20 million has gone then? My guess is that the teacher salaries haven't doubled or tripled in that time, so I'm curious as to where that extra, the expenses have increased by $20 million over that time. If you get the same number of students, you decrease the number of teachers by 100 in that time span. So there's $20 million going someplace. Can you give me an idea where that's going, please?
Yep.
Mr. Dickinson.
Thank you, committee. First of all, mathematically, I'd tell you to look at what that increase is over that time frame. It might surprise you that it's really not that much. But again, the bulk of a school district's expenditures are in staff. Our staff have probably averaged 2 to 3% wage increases in this whole time period. the danger of me showing you big numbers is that there are revenues that districts get that are tied to certain expenditures, such as special education. Special education is probably the largest portion of our budget that grows every year. And by the way, when I say we had 500 teachers and now we're going to have 400, we probably still have the same amount or more special education teachers. I know you hear that over and over again, but that is a large piece of the puzzle.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and inadvertently I didn't realize Representative Moore's bill would have been up today. If everyone would go into the Representative Benson's packet. Within this packet there is the educational, I had a handout put in there that refers to what Representative Moore had referred to earlier, the educational opportunity gaps. And it shows where you live and what your school district is paying on a $250,000 house. And if you look at Orono, for example, is paying on a $250,000 house, they're at $292,000. If you go to the last page, actually the last couple pages, they're maxed out at $1,086 there. And a lot of them are very, very, very rural districts. And it has to do with some of the problems that we're having passing referendums, what it does to our property tax. At the same time, if you remember, we had Brainerd that testified, Representative Grinning earlier, we had a student that testified, where the opportunity for the classes, say for example, at Brainerd, after all of these cuts, some of the school districts are down to one foreign language. They don't have the opportunity of taking, say for example, a school district in Edina might have 10 different foreign languages you can choose from. You might be able to take a calculus or other courses you cannot take in some of these rural schools because of this opportunity gap. So that student does not have the opportunity of getting on to a Harvard or a Yale because those opportunities are not there in high school. So those are some of the things that, again, when you look at, but when you look at the numbers of the money of how, right now, the governor's constantly told us to go back to referendums when we did the property tax reform bill. But when we did that, we took away a lot of the property wealth from a lot of these school districts. And until we address that problem, as Representative Moore stated, it's very, very difficult to pass them.
Thank you very much. It looks like we have another testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to introduce, you've seen him before, Dr. Stan Mack, from the Superintendent of the Robbinsdale School District.
Welcome, Dr. Mack. If you could re-identify yourself for the tape.
Yes, Chair Grayling, members of the committee. I'm Stan Mack, Superintendent of Robbinsdale Area Schools. I heard earlier the comments relating to the fact that Bemidji, and potentially Grand Rapids and Brainerd are the poster children outside upstate Minnesota regarding issues of operating referendums. Robbinsdale and several others are the poster child in the mid in the metro area regarding the issue of operating referendums. Fundamentally, you've heard my message from you before. I speak on behalf of this effort of Representative Moll and Outstate Schools regarding the unfairness, the inequity of operating referendums. We sit on the border of two school districts that can offer children between $600 and $700 more across the street from one from us, where students can walk across the street and be benefited by an operating referendum that truly, in effect, violates your constitutional responsibility of a uniform system of public education. We need reform. We need reform. The system is broken. The situation faced by our outstate school districts and metro school districts regarding the property tax shift, the property tax burden. We are still collecting under $12 million less in total property taxes in the Robbinsdale School District than we did in 2000. However, who is paying for that property tax is different than in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our homeowners, who rightfully raise the issue fundamentally in saying, enough is enough, and I understand that, and I respect that. The responsibility for this body and your Senate colleagues and the governor's office is to respond back and not piece by piece dismantle a very quality public education system in Minnesota. The system you now have in place is starving and picking and choosing who's going to survive. Bemidji, Brainerd, Grand Rapids, and Robbinsdale Community Schools all deserve to survive, and those children deserve the same equal education as Wayzata and Hopkins and other districts that are able to have the property tax wealth support in equal education.
Thank you very much. And I don't know if you heard or not, but you were so eloquent last time you were here when we had a House DFL Education Caucus last week. We quoted a few people on our PowerPoint, and you were one of them. So thank you for your good quotes now as well as last time. We would invite you if you want to come, Representative Heigerkin. We need a couple more education votes. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And pretty much going off of what I've heard others say here, you know, you have in our tax system, we have the three-legged stool. You have income tax, sales tax, and property tax. And costs go up, and you basically have to pay for some of these things somewhere. But when it comes to education and equalization, the more you can fund with statewide taxes, the income and the sales, the better it is. Because as you're saying, the more you push these things to the local level, you all of a sudden have the property poor and the property rich, and you have the haves and the have-nots. And the more you rely on it, the greater the disparity becomes in opportunities and everything else. And I see here, Representative Bowe, that the total referendum revenue is $724 million, and you're asking the governor to replace that. And I think if something was truly local, that should be paid by property taxes. And 2001 reform tried to do that. If it's truly local, it should. But when you got 724, to put that in perspective, that would be like raising the per pupil funding $724. That'd be like 14% to 15%. And that's, so this is no longer an excess referendum. This is because, quite frankly, we're not keeping up with the funding needs on a statewide basis through the income and sales tax. And the magnitude of it, I mean, if it was down to 30 or 40 million, I'd say, you know, school districts are doing things because they want to do something special. It's excess, and you could live with that. But when 90% of the districts now have the operating referendum, that's no longer excess. That's just to survive and to make ends meet and to educate your children. So I totally support this bill. The funding, of course, might be the problem. Even in our property tax bill last year, Madam Chair, that's what we tried to do also, is to take things more on a statewide basis, because that, to me, it reduces the inequities in whatever system we have. And if we're going to be truly one Minnesota, we have to make sure that the equity is there. And how do you do that? And I think you do that by covering as much as you can on a statewide basis. So I thank you, Representative Moe and testifiers, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And of course, as we have increased property taxes on ag lands and C&I and residential seasonal rec homes, then the more we rely on these levies, the more the homeowners pay, and then you get trouble passing them. So we, the legislature, have piled on with this problem, I believe, by wanting to make tax cuts when we should have been also funding education, and then we wouldn't have this train wreck. Representative McFarland.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, do we have a fiscal note on this?
Representative McFarland. Okay. Representative McFarland, there is not, but as Representative Marquardt, who serves on the tax committee, has informed us, and I'm sure he's right, it would be fairly substantial.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I just...
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Representative McFarland, there's not a fiscal note because we're canceling the operating levy referendum through this year. And then next year, next session, when we're all down here fighting for our districts again, we will be all on the same playing field. And together, you and I will be arguing together for education funding from the same place. Our districts will have the same level of funding as opposed to the disparate level of funding we have right now. And I don't know if you have an operating levy referendum in your district or not. Assuming you do, you won't be arguing from a lifeboat, and we're arguing from being in the water. We'll all be in the water and fighting just as strong to correct the problem.
Madam Chair and Representative McFarland
and Representative Moe, This would repeal all levies, including the ones that are grandfathered in from some districts, too?
Correct.
Rep. Van Bolt.
Correct, Madam Chair.
Rep. Van Bolt. Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I came here today to have this great discussion with my good friend from Bemidji, Representative Moe, and I'm still confused by the amendment that was offered to the bill, and you've kind of thrown a curveball at me. You've taken away all my art, all the fun I was going to have with you today.
Go for it anyway.
I'll try. Your bill was to repeal property tax levies, but didn't you put an amendment on that said the school board can just impose the property tax levies?
Representative,
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I would prefer that we didn't have to add the amendment. I would prefer that we had the power here in this committee and in the legislature to repeal operating levy referendums completely. However, I know that's not going to happen. I wish it would happen today, and I hope we continue to put pressure on our chair. She's acquiesced to hear the bill, but we're not going to be able to accomplish this today. So there are some districts that have asked for a lifeboat now. They want to be able to have a public meeting, say, you know, we want to raise, we have election certificates just like you do, just like city council and county board does. We would like to be able to raise our own levy without having to go to the voters, and we will be beholden to the voters to do so. So we've added that amendment to allow them to do that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Mill, I'm being sincere. I know sometimes I ask questions and I really know the answer to it. I really didn't know. I was really confused about it. So, Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow, I've asked this question before, and now might be the appropriate time to repeat the answer to this to the committee. If we look at education funding in the state of Minnesota to all school districts on a macro level, what percentage of funding comes from the state of Minnesota, and what percentage comes from property tax sources?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, are you excluding fees and federal sources? You want just the state aid and the local property tax?
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, yes.
About 80% state aid for fiscal year 2009.
Mr. Strom, and that is why, you know, if you include federal and fees, you get a different percent, and that's why different legislators quote different amounts, and Mr. Crow has a very nice publication that he puts out every year that I think that one was 68%, wasn't it? And that was the other figure. So it all depends on what, if you include everything or if you don't. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, so again, the 68% figure would be if you included federal funds as well as the non-tax revenue sources, so just short of 70%. And Madam Chair, and my good friend from Bemidji and tour guide to the Bemidji area, who, and by the way, I should tell everyone this because no one knows this. This guy is like the best tourist emissary for the city of Bemidji. We brought my family up to Bemidji this summer, and Representative Moe was our tour guide and set us up.
Well,
and it was
Representative Garofalo actually caught a fish himself.
Representative Moe, are you sure?
The one downside to the story is I'm not even the most popular state rep in my family anymore. So as I set it up here, Madam Chair, Representative Moe, I noticed under Section 2 that you tell the governor to fix, you know, give us the revenue for this. Tell us how you're going to plan. And Madam Chair, Representative Moe, I would ask, where's your plan? Where's your money? We've been hearing in this committee, and we've heard for 2 years now, there's this problem, we've got an issue, and people are continually highlighting the problem, and we're not seeing a solution. We're not seeing a bill brought forward. And I'd like your comments on that.
We'll take the answer to that one. Then we have Representative Marquardt, Representative Erickson. Then we're going to go to Representative Benson's bill because we also have Representative Walker's bill. We want to get to all three bills. So Representative Moe, as you know, our whole caucus works on this issue. We did have the Education Caucus, so this is kind of a long-term question, I think, and you can take a short stab at it, and we'll go back to the bill then.
Representative Garofalo, as you know, better than I do from being in this committee, that our committee chair and the committee process will have a plan for that, and I'll support that plan. I will
support a plan that has income tax increases for the wealthiest Minnesotans. I will support a plan that has sales tax increase in it. I will support a plan that allows counties or school boards to have the discretion to raise the levies that we know we now require them to go to the voters for. Some combination of that to fill this almost $800 million gap, and I'd say that the gap is much larger than that, but the operating levy portion of that gap, I would support a mixed solution. And if you'd like me to rough it out on a napkin, I'd be glad to do that right now.
And Representative Raffel, now you see why Representative Moe is so popular.
Madam Chair, he is a good member.
He's a good member, and there's a lot of good members here, and I have a feeling that next year we'll all be looking at a lot of those things, if not all of those things, because it's come to a head with education, and that's why we have this bill and Representative Benson's bill. But I think everyone on this committee would agree that property taxes just is not fair. It's the worst tax. It's very regressive, and it does come out with the haves and have-nots because of the differing property valuation and the differing voters, and now we even have the differing election methods. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick comment. Even though I really like your bill, I didn't like your amendment because I think what we do when you allow it to come back on the levies is you're taking the state off the hook. Mm-hmm. And I realize how important it is for schools to get going, but and also to Representative McFarland, it wouldn't cost the state $724 million because if you, with this amendment now, you'd have some chances for the cities to, or the school districts to levy. So they wouldn't have it all. It'd be a little less than that. But I know what you're trying to do with this, but I don't like it going back on the property taxes.
Dr. Mack, and then Representative Erickson. Dr. Mack.
Yes, Chair, and in response, I'll take Representative Moe off the hook on that issue. My presence here was allowed by that amendment. Otherwise, I'd have to explain where I come up with $13 million of the existing operating levy we have in place. But that is truly the issue, that even at our $800 plus dollars per pupil that we collect presently, which will expire in 2011, we are in the position of having our next door neighbors with a grandfathered levy in one case of $700 more per student, and across the street to the west, $600 more per student in Wayzata. That creates for us a differential that is proportional to the sister district relationship that many of our outstate districts face with one another.
And we're all in this together, and that's why the PS Minnesota report that we're wanting to respond to and will be after the spring break is has to have a lot of things in it for a lot of different types of districts if we're all going to agree upon it in the end. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow to give a summary, brief summary, of what used to happen when we had the general education levy and what effect that had on property taxes.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, prior to the 2001 legislative session, the general education revenue program was partially financed through state aid and partially through a local levy that was called the general education levy. That levy was an amount that was set in statute for about the last 6 years before it was eliminated, about $1.3 billion that needed to be raised. And every school district levied the same tax rate in order to raise that amount. So, for instance, in the last year of its program, the tax rate was about 25% of tax capacity. And nearly every school district in the state levied that rate. Whatever difference between their revenue amounts and that levy was provided to them in state aid. So a very low revenue school or a very property poor school district would, that same rate of 25% maybe would only raise $1,000 per pupil of the $5,000 they needed for general education. The remaining $4,000 would come in aid. A relatively property wealthy school district, maybe the 25% rate would raise $4,500 and the remaining $500 would come in state aid. So prior to the elimination of that levy, the general education levy was the biggest school levy, but it was also evenly distributed on a rate basis throughout the state.
Thank you. And we're going to go on to the next bill, and Representative Demmer, maybe your question will fit in with the next bill because it's similar in topic.
Ma'am, so, do you indulge me with 30 seconds closing comment?
Representative Moe, that's just what I was going to do, turn to you for your closing comment.
Thank you. Thank you again, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. I just want to remind members, many of the members I know quote this as justification for us fairly funding, adequately funding state education. I want to remind you in Section 1, Article 13 of our Minnesota Constitution, we all have these in our desks, and it says specifically, uniform system of public schools, the stability of a Republican form of government depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it is the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise as will secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would say right now, and by the insistence that we have this mechanism for raising revenue for some districts and not for others, we are out of compliance with the Minnesota Constitution. This is not uniform, and it is not even throughout the state of Minnesota. I would have your support.
Thank you, Representative Moe. Well said, and I think we would all agree with you on that last statement and with the Constitution. House File 3107 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Benson.
Amen, brother. Praise the Lord and pass.
Representative Benson, you're on the committee, so you know what to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 3108 for possible inclusion, please.
Representative Benson moves House File 3108 for possible inclusion. Representative Benson.
The discussion of the last bill was very interesting to me, and in some ways I have one that parallels it. It's similar in many ways. And we're not going to take too much time, I think. So I want to ingratiate myself with the chair and my committee members by moving quickly. What we have here is a restriction or the restriction that affects only a few districts, as the overview discusses many districts qualified because of sparsity revenue and others that were grandfathered in. There's a handful of school districts who are going to be hit in 2009 by a reduction in the revenue that they are able to collect from referenda that their own citizens passed. And among that handful of districts, most of the districts I represent fit into this small group. And I have with me here a testifier, Superintendent Bank Pearson from Minnetonka, who I hope will enlighten us further.
Very good. Welcome, Superintendent Peterson. If you could identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Peterson. I'm the superintendent of schools in Minnetonka School District 276. If I could, I'd like to give you just a little bit of background on this provision of the law and why we are interested in having you make some changes in the existing statute. In the 2003 session, we proposed to the legislature, and they saw fit to put an inflationary factor on the operating referendums of all districts throughout the state of Minnesota if the voters of those respective districts chose to do that. Many districts maybe didn't want to propose that to their voters. Others did and incorporated it in subsequent authorization from their voters. And really, we were finding after we passed the referendum that we were losing buying power almost immediately. The next year we would go down 3 to 4 percentage points, and after 4 or 5 years we were down by 15 to 20 percentage points on the buying power of the levy that was originally passed. So that was the logic of putting the inflationary factor in place, was to maintain the buying power that the voters saw fit to pass initially. But part of the provision of that inflationary factor for 7 districts in the state of Minnesota was that starting with fiscal 09, which means the taxes for 08, in other words, we've already certified our levy, so we're already affected by the limitation, is that instead of the consumer price index that's provided in statute for all the other districts whose voters approved it, these seven districts will get 1/4 of each percentage point that you raise the formula allowance. So if you raise the formula allowance 1 percentage point, we're going to get a 0.25% increase in inflation for our referendum. That's inconsistent with what the legislature saw fit to do for all the other districts. And we're asking that you remove that limitation so that we're all on equal footing in terms of how our respective districts are treated. I believe all seven of the districts, I'd have to ask your staff to verify this, but I don't believe there's any equalization aid involved in any of those referendums for the seven districts. It's all carried by the local electorate who have made that decision to tax themselves accordingly. And we've had the language in the ballot question to either put in the inflationary factor or not put in the inflationary factor. So they've knowingly put that in whenever it's been possible. I would also like to point out that this is one of the few ways that we get a little bit of an inflationary increase. When we hear, when I hear discussion about referendums and so forth, it's always in isolation. It's not in the context of all the money that districts get in Minnesota. Minnetonka is often viewed as a wealthy district. We rank 184th in per pupil spending in the state of Minnesota. That's hardly a wealthy spending district. We have a very limited budget. So while our voters are putting more into the mix than other districts, you have to look at the total context. You can't just say, well, referendum districts are getting a lot more than others, and therefore they ought to be limited. There's a whole picture here that has to be viewed. So this is one of the few ways that we get a little bit of inflationary increase. I know a couple of years ago, if you looked at the total amount of state money coming to Minnetonka School District, we were either last or next to last in the amount of state funds that came to our district. So we're just asking for some equitable treatment on this particular provision.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Peterson. Representative Demmer, does your question work on this bill or not?
No, Madam Chair, it doesn't.
Okay. All righty. Any other questions? Any testimony from the audience? Welcome, Mr. Lundell, and
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and just more for clarification purposes, and I look at this issue a lot, and I don't have any particular problem with this bill, except it fosters greater reliance on the referendum over time, and I think what we're going to be talking about, and I think Senator Moe, Representative Moe talked about, because we're used to saying Senator Moe after all these years. So
we know that's an easy mistake to make around here.
Easy mistake. I would say that we really have to look at where the referendum sits in the whole policy spectrum. And as I was talking to you last week, I think what we're talking about, do we go to 341 rowboats, some of which are leaking, or do we build a big enough arc for all of us? And hopefully the legislature can come up with the lumber to build a big enough arc to raise everyone to where they need to be. The only other thing I wanted to say with this is that there gets to be the sparsity districts get to be batted around like they have this great advantage in that they have no referendum cap, which they don't have. But the actual average sparsity district has about $200 less per pupil than the state average in terms of the referendum authority. So that's a distinction without a difference to me, and I think it's something that muddies this issue. I mean, the sparsity districts don't have a cap, but in effect, yeah, everyone has a cap in that they can only spend the money that they have. Tom Anzalsa's district has no referendum, but they get a ton of sparsity money. And I think it's a real murky area, and I just think that kind of muddies the issue. But other than that, for this issue, for this bill, I don't see anything, you know, horribly wrong with it. So.
That's a great commendation.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say, usually when I testify on these types of bills on the referendum cap, there's usually a straitjacket, someone with a straitjacket waiting for me out in the hallway and got the thorns being ready to fill me up. But I think that this is reasonable, and I think that inflation needs to work for everybody.
Thank you very much. And Rep. Benson, would you like to repeat your comment? Yes.
I just say that was a praise with that was faint praise. I think that praise. Just in conclusion, there is a fiscal note with it, and you'll notice that it affects only local school districts, as the testifier indicated. And I just want to say, in general, although I represent some of these districts, I've listened time and time again, the superintendents, members of the school board in these districts that I represent, voicing their concern about funding throughout the state and the necessity that our state adequately funds the education for every child. That is certainly my objective. And if we are able to move on these reforms, I can assure the members of this committee and the people that I represent that I'll be working hard to cooperate and succeed at that, because these children throughout the state are all our children.
Thank you, Rep. Benson, and I join with you in those words, and I, so members know, two of my districts are on that very short list that's on the fiscal note, St. Anthony, New Brighton, and Rosa Area Schools, and I can tell you that those are not hugely high-income districts and people, but they just have, the property wealth being relied upon kind of gives a skewed picture. If we're trying to, I always hate to think of people thinking that property wealthy districts are all wealthy people, because I door knock in those districts, and I know that we have a lot of mobile home parks and multiple dwellings, and so when we rely on the property taxes, we make it look like every little senior widow that's in my district is wealthy, and I can tell you that's not true. And so I hope we can get away from property taxes and not have to have the kinds of bills that we have just heard, because we all know that it's not a fair way to go. So any questions for Representative Benson? Any other testimony from the audience? And hearing none, then, House File 3108 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And the last bill is Representative Walker, who arrived just in time. We heard you were presenting two other bills before you got here. Oh, my gosh.
Madam Chair, Representative Koch took over for me.
Oh, very good, because we're glad to have you here for ourselves in this committee with House File 615, which I will move for passage and re-referral to the Education Finance Committee. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you have an amendment. Did you want to do that first?
Yes, can we do that?
I will move the H0615DE4 amendment, a delete all amendment. Does everyone have that in their packet?
Madam Chair, I have
Walker.
An oral amendment.
An oral amendment to the delete all, okay? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 4.
Page 4.
After line 412.
After line 412. Amend the title accordingly, and then what?
Repealer. Minnesota Statute 2006.
Repealer Minnesota Statute 2006,
comma, section 121A,
section
1218.23,
comma,
is repealed.
What was the last one?
Is repealed.
Okay, so it now says members on 4.12 after amend the title accordingly. Repealer Minnesota Statutes 2006, comma, section 121A.23 is repealed, period. We'll just incorporate that. And any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Walker, on your amendment.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is pretty much what came out of committee last year, and I want to thank each one of you guys for your patience and your assistance last year. We were successful not only going through multiple committees last year and being able to keep the language in going into conference committee, and at the very last minute, unfortunately, it was taken out moving the K-12 omnibus bill. And so, yes, we're back here again, trying to move it again. I do believe that it's the right way to be going. It's making sure that we do have some standards as it relates to how what information young people are learning. And hopefully, you know, last year Dr. Resnick spoke, and since the University of Minnesota has updated their survey, I believe that you got a copy of that. You know, one of the things that, you know, is unfortunately, you know, when we changed the name to responsible, we probably should have got the word sex education also, because that's really the flag. It's not the crux of the bill. It's not the crux of what we're trying to accomplish here. But that's what really scares individuals, unfortunately. You know, as I said last year in your committee, this committee, you know, while there are information that I do want young people to know that is standard health education around sex, I'm more interested in some of the other aspects of the bill, things that young people are not necessarily all learning at home. And unfortunately, with the adolescents being the way that they are, more and more young people are doing things, whether they are physically violent to the new girlfriend or unfortunately withdrawing and having some difficulties themselves mentally. And so I do believe that it's an opportunity for young people to be able to have a place to learn, get some quality information from educators that have some standard information. And so I hopefully will get your support today, and I look forward to any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Representative Walker. And we do have some people here to testify as well. But are there any questions from members first? Okay. The first person on the list, then, and just so members who are, or people from the audience who are testifying know, there are four people on the list who signed up, excuse me, ahead of time, and this committee adjourns at 3:45, and we are going to vote. Before then, also, I've had a request from a member and any other members who came in late to run through once again the schedule for our omnibus bill, which I did do at the beginning of session. So we have about 10 minutes for testimony. And Mr. Pritchard is first. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I want to speak in opposition to the bill in terms of its mandate of comprehensive, our view, comprehensive sex education. Recently, there are news reports out that we have an epidemic of STDs among our young children, our young people. 25% of kids have an STD. In our urban areas, it's upwards of 50%. And we believe that this mandate is exactly the wrong message to be mandating. This is a mandate. This is on every school. Schools no longer would have local control over this issue. But we believe this is the wrong message. The predominant education philosophy in our sex education is comprehensive, is contraceptive education, and it's been an abysmal failure. That's the reason I believe we have an epidemic in our society, is not just our schools teaching that message, but in the broader cultural context. This is also the wrong approach, because contraceptives do not prevent the spread of STDs. And in some cases, there are studies showing they may reduce it. But I think our goal for our kids is what's best. We want to reduce and eliminate the spread of STDs. And we believe the evidence shows that it doesn't prevent. And in fact, I think we're pouring fuel on the fire. Also, we're concerned that this mandate would preclude the abstinence until marriage message from being taught in our schools. And we think that's the wrong approach, too. Studies show also that parents, when they find out what's involved in comprehensive sex education, support plummets. Parents do not support the message of contraceptive, emphasis, focus, alternative sexual lifestyles, other things which will come in under this mandate. And so we're very concerned about this mandate, and we strongly oppose it, and we believe that we should hold out what's best for our kids, true clean abstinence message, and then this will go the exact wrong way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Patty Olson. Welcome, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Patty Olson, and I would like to share with you my personal story regarding the harm done to young people that believe the dangerous message of protective sex that comprehensive sex education promotes. Comprehensive sex education only gives a weak abstinence message with little or no time talking about marriage. Condoms are the centerpiece of these programs. They teach kids how to engage in so-called safe sex for the protection from pregnancy and sexual diseases. The focus is only on the physical. From my own experience, I can assure you that there is no condom for the emotional aspect. We don't address this in these comprehensive sex education programs. The emotional damage done to sexually active teenagers is huge. As a teenager, I was sexually active. Yes, I was taught in comprehensive sex education how to protect myself against pregnancy, although I still ended up pregnant. I was never taught, however, how emotionally devastating premarital sex could be. The first boy with whom I had sex was someone I dated for a period of time, and I honestly thought I would marry him one day, so thus made sex okay. I was never taught. We were monogamous. Even in this relationship, I felt guilt and shame each time we had sex. After the relationship ended, I became sexually active with other guys, and my self-respect hit rock bottom. I soon turned to drugs and alcohol to numb the pain that the sexual promiscuity was there. At 16, I became involved with an older man, and I became pregnant. He left me. I was left all alone to deal with the pregnancy and to deal with the emotional fallout of our relationship. I tried to hold my head high in later months as my pregnancy became known, but all the time I was dying inside, feeling the guilt and shame, a general disrespect for myself, and the emotional scars that were left that this relationship left behind. We cannot continue to promote the lie to our young people that sex is okay as long as you protect yourself. It's so damaging to suggest to vulnerable young teens in sex education that kids are going to have sex anyway, so we need to teach them how to do it safely. We must not teach our young people that premarital sex is normal and acceptable. They need to hear strong, reinforced messages about abstinence until marriage. We must teach them to love themselves enough to say no and to find their value and worth in other things, not in sex or in condom skills. We must teach our young women to guard their purity for the sake of their long-term emotional health. And we must teach our young men to respect women enough to help keep them sexually pure. I've been married now for nearly 20 years, and with God's help, I've been able to change my life, and my husband and I did not have sex before marriage. However, the consequences of my years in participating in casual sex have stayed with me in the form of emotional scars. These scars would not be there if I had stayed sexually pure. I urge you to reject the comprehensive sex education bill before you. This bill will bring in more harmful sex education messages that continue to do physical, mental, and emotional damage to countless young people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. We've had one person take themselves off the list, so the last testifier is Barb Anderson. Welcome, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barb Anderson. I am a teacher that has been researching sex education curricula for the past 18 years. As you consider this sex education bill before you, and I urge you to oppose this, I hope you have a complete understanding of what the content is in comprehensive sex education, because this is what this bill will be mandating. Virtually all comprehensive sex education curricula have similar content. In your package before you are examples of three curricula that are the most popular in Minnesota and are currently in use all around the state. They were highlighted once again this past January at the Minnesota School Health Education Conference. Reducing the risk and safer choices are promoted and described by MOAP as two of the most commonly used packaged health education curricula in Minnesota. You can see for yourself the graphic content in your packet. I find it very interesting that the 2006 Health Implementation Survey in Minnesota on HIV prevention and sex education, the findings show that 86% of the high schools in Minnesota and 71% of our middle schools use comprehensive sex education, also known as abstinence first or abstinence based. And 32% of the teachers, according to this survey in Minnesota, 32% of our teachers have students practice how to use condoms. What is wrong with comprehensive-based sex education? The curriculum uses graphic and explicit content and sexually stimulating classroom activities, games, condom lessons and demonstrations, and homework activities such as shopping for condoms and phones. Teen promiscuity is normalized by treating it as simply a recreational activity. Responsible sex is presented as sex with a condom. Anal sex is presented as just another option with the extreme health of such behavior omitted. Dental dams are presented as they were at this conference, as promotion for oral sex, for oral sex, including instructions how to make them. But they omit the warning from the CDC that there is no proof that dental dams even work. And they omit the evidence that oral sex is now linked to oral cancer in the throat, mouth, and base of the tongue due to HPV transmission during oral sex. And as the previous testifier said, comprehensive sex education ignores the emotional damage done to promiscuous teens. At this past health conference, let me just briefly conclude with an example of what we were asked to do as teachers. In the comprehensive sex education workshop, we as teachers were asked to pretend that we were students and to come up to the front of the room and participate in what I can only describe as a degrading classroom activity that was designed for our teenagers. We were told to play sexual behavior cards on a continuum from abstinence to sexual intercourse. The behaviors included holding hands, spooning naked with your partner, open mouth kissing with clothes on, masturbating by oneself, taking a shower together, touching a breast, mutual masturbation with clothes on, fingering someone, getting a hand job, going down on someone. After we arranged these words in an agreed-upon order, the presenter then said, "There is no right or wrong answer. There are different definitions of sex, different definitions of abstinence. There are different values and definitions among us. Students need to explore these definitions in a safe environment, including talking about anal, vaginal, or oral sex," end quote. We were told that we should have our students in the health classes write down all of the words that they can think of to describe sexual intercourse, including street talk, slang, so that they can talk among themselves about their sexual needs with their partners. This is comprehensive sex education. We've also shown a penis model for classroom condom demonstrations and dental dams, and a condom encouraged to use the condom lineup activity, and I will spare you the graphic comments and instructions from that. That's included in your packet as well. The teachers for these activities were told to encourage lively discussion and group participation in correcting the order. Well, you can imagine how lively that discussion would be in the classroom. And just imagine what these young children are thinking about when they go to math class the next hour. I urge you to reject this bill that mandates sex education known as abstinence first or abstinence based. It is all comprehensive sex education. We do not need more lessons that break down the modesty of our teens, take away local control of the curriculum, and infuse sex education with more unhealthy messages. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Walker, how will your proposal here change what's happening among our young people today? I mean, will it reduce STDs? And if so, how?
And Representative Walker, very briefly, because we're going to vote very soon, and I want to run through the committee schedule as well.
Thank you, Madam
Walker.
Chair, and Representative Erickson, wonderful question. Information is powerful. There's a few different things. How all of our young people aren't getting the information right now in school. And so to think the abstinence is great, abstinence is what I want, but to think that all of our kids are not refraining from having sex, we're fooling ourselves. Even if our kids aren't having sex and are just in a girlfriend, boyfriend, that emotional damage that can be caused just without being physical, that could have been prevented through some education is helpful. While I have the moment, Madam Chair, if I could just briefly, you know, there's a friend of mine, he's an associate minister. Him and his wife been together more than 20 years. They have three great kids. The second daughter went off to college, just turned 18, and as far as he knows, has abstained up until she graduated. Had an open relationship with her, and mind you, she had an internship in Florida this summer. But guess what? She won't be doing that. Because little did they know, she's pregnant. So even if we get our kids through college, we're still not guaranteed when they go off to have adequate information. You know, and unfortunately, too many of our young people, whether we want to be honest with it or not, they're having sex. We have young people that think they can't get pregnant if they do X, Y, or Z. We have young people that think that oral sex is not considered sex. We have young people who are beating up the new girlfriend. There has to be a way to standardize this information. And thankfully, the bill does a little bit more than what we currently do offer in some of our local jurisdictions. And it will give an opportunity for our local districts to pull in community, parents, teachers to figure out the best curriculum. And so the curriculum that was just noted through the testimony would not necessarily have to be in your community if that was something that the parents, the teachers, the administration did not see fit.
Thank you, Representative Walker. We'll consider that also your closing statement. One last follow-up, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Walker, I know your intentions are well-intentioned, but we don't have any control over what the teacher teaches in the classroom. This, you know, some of this information I agree with, but we don't control what students actually learn in the classroom from their friends. You know, this is a responsibility of parents and of the church, and the fact that you're offering here something that's so expansive and does not go in the direction, of course, that I would hope it would, and that's that we just get rid of this unfunded mandate. But, Madam Chair, this so bothers me that I move that we table this, delete all as amended, and I call for a roll call.
Tabling, non-debatable, roll call has been requested. I'll call on the our committee assistants to call the roll. I'll be.
Grayling?
No.
Enzel?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer? Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidgerken?
Yes.
Hilstrom? Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Olson? Swales?
No.
The motion does not prevail, and what was the vote? 13-5, so I'll renew my motion that House File 615 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is recommended to pass and return to the Education Finance and Economic Competitiveness Division. Thank you, Representative Walker. Just briefly, I'll go through the omnibus bill one more time, and that is that tomorrow we hope to get the bill into the hands of every member in this committee when we can run through it. And then on Tuesday, when we come back after the break and we have our afternoon hearing, we'll mark up the bill. And it's our understanding it would be in Representative Murphy's committee the next day and Representative Carlson's committee the day after that.
Thanks.
With that, the meeting is adjourned.